Okay, so I'm just going to walk through a little bit of our evaluation process and some of our strategies. We are part of the Arizona Prevention Research Center, and one of our methodological, philosophical approaches is community-based participatory research. And we have traditionally worked maybe more in rural border communities, and we provide a lot of technical assistance to our, we were kind of having this conversation about the role of evaluators. I don't think my colleagues nor I can disentangle ourselves from providing technical assistance. And so one of the themes that will come out is that I usually feel pretty beholden to providing useful tools for community partners through the evaluation process. And, you know, sometimes where, you know, you wonder if you really ever get to the outcomes or not. So just a reminder of how our structure was in our teams here. And then the emphasis on these target areas, these 15 target areas, what we're trying to do is find out that the idea of all of this was that all of these partners and all of these efforts were going to have concentrated efforts in those 15 areas, but yet still be countywide. So I chose two of those teams, the neighborhoods team, because we were thinking about this community-based, place-based, and those geographic areas, and then also the schools team. And one of the things that I think about a lot in terms of evaluation priorities is I'm not afraid to talk about the money. And so just to give you an idea, Pima County also was awarded about $16 million. It's probably the largest amount of money ever awarded to our community. The precursor to CPPW was the Steps to a Healthier Arizona initiative. And that was received by our State Department of Health in Phoenix, but the award was for rural communities, and it was in the border. So there had been a five-year initiative prior that was very similar, and I think that some of the lessons learned with STEPS that was saying, well, we need to now work on policy and environmental systems change sort of led to CPPW. And just that reminder again that this was ARRA stimulus monies, and it was about creating jobs. And so the two-year timeline is definitely something we'll keep talking about. And one of the unique perspectives that an evaluator has is even at the beginning of a project, we're already thinking about the end of a project. And so at the beginning of this two-year project, when we created 150 jobs in our community, I was already thinking about what's going to happen when all those people lose their jobs in 2 years and everyone starts jumping ship. And I'm laughing, but it's just out of trying not to cry. So going back to what's going on with the neighborhood focus, this is some of the process for the neighborhood team with Pro Neighborhoods. I have the process over here and some of the resources. And remember, there's 15 focus areas. There's an assessment. They usually do some kind of unique neighborhood survey. And so if they chose to do that, we went with that. If they needed a survey, we could help them provide them with a survey. Then they use they go through a visioning process, identifying priorities, and they do some project planning, and then they're going to implement this project. And basically, each neighborhood connector has about a $6,000 pot of money to do a neighborhood project. In addition to that, the schools team had allocated $25,000 per focus area that could have been done in conjunction and collaboration. So the extent to which these groups will, with the schools team and the neighborhoods team, will collaborate on those projects, leveraging and combining their resources, remains to be seen, and it probably won't be, you know, across the board with all of them. Plus, there were some discretionary funds through the built environment team. So what we did in the very beginning is those 15 areas, everyone wanted to kind of know some data. So we developed these community profiles.
And you're welcome to take a look at these later.
For each of the 15 communities, we developed their own appropriate profile. That was census data. So basically, first of all, we mapped out as close as we could what this community was and what the neighborhood was. And sometimes one of those questions in CBPR was this target area community driven, or was this the grantees kind of figuring out where they were going to target people? So we aligned it as much as we could with census tracts, and we got secondary census data. We also did key informant interviews with those neighborhood connectors, so about 15 interviews. We collected their surveys, we processed their surveys for them, and we included all that information in here. So for each neighborhood kind of community, we had the census data, we had the interviews of the connectors who were sort of the leaders of the community, plus we aggregated the information from their community surveys. And then we did observational assessments. It'll show you a graphic before, which included a variety of tools that we developed. So these I mean, these barely got printed out, what, in the past couple months, so talking about timelines. So the idea was they can use these profiles, go to their visioning workshop, identify more priorities, and move forward. Also, we did do BRFIS sampling. We did oversampling in the target areas in these bi-census tracts. And then they also did another sample of similar communities that were not our target areas, but that had similar SES and ethnicity, and the idea is that we might be able to compare them. Of course, it's a two-year timeline. We may never do this again, but if we were to do it again, that would be the idea, to track the changes. That's what we've done so far, and then where we're at right now is this matrix of projects that we're trying to develop, and I have a graphic of that as well, where we're basically looking at all the projects they're trying to do, what were the resources leveraged, what were the policy barriers, and some of the examples we have, for example, is if a community wants to do, let's say they're in a housing, an apartment complex that's managed by La Frontera, which is a social service organization. They decide they want a play area for kids, find out there's liability issues from La Frontera, that's the barrier, and then do they just stop there, or how do we as partners help them overcome those barriers? Another example might be another apartment complex community decides they want to do these, what are they? They're like hydroponic tomato gardeners, plantar gardeners, and they need very few resources, right? But then there's ordinances within the apartments that they can only use water for bathing and washing, and that because they don't want people washing their cars, they don't, and so no gardening allowed. So how do we work with that kind of level of policy barriers? So that's what we're in right now, and then in the future, at the end of the project, we will do some more key informant interviews with the community organizers from that, from Pro Neighborhoods, the staff, the neighborhood connectors, and project leaders of the neighborhood projects, and then we will go back and do the observational assessments. So just to give you an idea of what's in these profiles, this is a snapshot of how we did the observational assessment, and here I listed some of the tools. We just kind of picked and choose what we liked from different tools. One of the things we did was to look at the physical activity environment and resources, so we were looking at parks, and really there aren't very many parks in the Tucson area in these neighborhoods, and sometimes the school is the only place, and so we would document if the school was open to the public, if there was hours posted. Sometimes they're open to the public, but there isn't necessarily a joint use agreement, and then we would sort of look at the quality in terms of safety and, you know, litter, pollution, drug paraphernalia, things like that. We also had the NEMS-V, NEMS-S for school, for grocery stores, neighborhood stores, and that's actually a really nice store. It's funny because we're always balancing this thing too about assets and resources and what, you know, resources and assets communities have, but at the same time, so in this case, this is a nice grocery store, but most of them are not. Most of them are like Circle K's with very limited produce. And this is a bus stop. This is what we call like a homemade bus stop where people actually just put their own plastic chairs out there. So this is kind of all the factors that we put into our observational assessment and our community profiles, some mixed methods. This is just an example of that policy matrix for the projects. So looking at the target area, what the description of the project is, leveraged funding, what kind of system or environmental change they're addressing, special considerations for the project, any policy barriers encountered, and then the steps taken. So this is kind of where we're at right now, trying to flesh everything out. And I think that both of these two things are tools that the agency and the community members can use post CPPW. So part of my objective in terms of the technical assistance and building capacity is doing the things that these agencies and individuals won't and can't do on their own in terms of data collection and organizing and thinking things through. The other example I wanted to give was the schools team, whose budget was about $2 million, and they're really trying to go for a comprehensive coordinated school health approach. So there's a lot of process involved because I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with coordinated school health. It's very new to the state of Arizona. We had the first round of funding from the CDC this funding cycle, so we're in our fourth year at the state level. Basically, we were partnering with the Department of Education and trying to replicate a lot of what they're trying to do at a state level on like 10 times the budget. So they put out applications for wellness coordinators for each school. There's a $1,200 stipend associated with it. They were supposed to develop school health advisory councils, do the school health index, do action planning. There's a lot of training involved. They gave monies for subtime, back here in the resources. These are examples of some of the trainings: Fuel Up to Play, Fit for Life, SHI and SHACS, the WellSat, which is the local policy assessment tool, grant writing workshops. They have a nutrition institute. student leadership group. So all of these best practices, but just countywide. So it's really, it's a huge moving target that's a little hard to track. Action planning, there's also this thing called a healthy school zone, where a school might get about $500 and they get a banner and they're designated a healthy school zone. And then also the focus areas have that $25,000 extra dollars for a focus area project, plus there's a lot of discretionary funds. So part of me feels beholden in terms of accountability to track the monies and how the monies are spent and the resources available to schools, but getting to those outcomes would be very challenging. The school health assessments, 77 schools did the school health index, and so again, as technical assistants to that team, we handled developing a database and pulling in all that, the results. And I do have an example of the summary of the results if anyone wants to look. As far as the school health index being a tool for individual schools and action plannings, I do believe it's a process-oriented tool, but I do feel beholden to an countywide effort with all these resources and having 70 schools that we'd want to do something with that information and say something countywide about those indicators. Same with the wealth stat. We had 9 out of 15 school districts do it, which was 60%. And this was all sort of new to our area, so it's been a huge influx of information and data collection. Plus, we did do the YRBS, and we got weighted data for the county. This is the first time that we had county-level data for the YRBS. This is also new to our community. And then that's what we've accomplished so far. One of the things that we're doing is we did the countywide overview of school health index and the WellSat. Now we're going to break it out by district so that we can go back to the superintendents and give them their WellSat score, which they're aware of, but with policy recommendations, look at their overall scores with SHI and all the action plans that their schools developed, de-identified, and then also give them this community profile. So if I'm a superintendent A and one of these communities is in my school district, they'll have this community profile as well. So giving people some tools and some resources to hopefully move forward after the project's over. And later to come, at the end of the project, we're going to try and do something with all the wellness coordinators. There's about 150 of them. We're going to experiment with an innovative evaluation activity called World Cafe. It's more or less like a focus group, but it's going to help them think through sustainability and next steps, and it's also an opportunity to get qualitative information and about the process and about the challenges and where they're going next, and then also to do a survey to collect some basic information. These are just some examples of the tools and products we created. So we took YRBS data about all the questions that they ask about things that happen on school property, and that was to be taken back to administrators. And then this one, we did a couple that were just topic oriented. We went to the 2009 YRBS and we did county, state, U.S. comparisons. Because like I said, this data has never been available at a county level. Also with the SHI and the WellSat, we've been able to build a database and partner with the Department of Health and the Department of Education in Phoenix, and we can share this database, and if they have new grants in the future, they would be able to aggregate and pull together their information. And I have examples of these tools if anyone wants to check them out later. These are just some other examples. I won't go into them. One of the things is all of the organizations and their projects are doing environmental assessments and policy assessments, so childcare is using the Knapsack. We'll just follow up with some extra questions about collaboration and policy. WorkSite is doing the Chili. And I just put the websites here, too, so you can find them all online. And then the faith-based is using a tool called Walk by Faith, Promoting Healthy Congregations Assessment. So the teams were already doing this. We sort of just provided assistance in doing data entry and summarizing the results, taking it back to the teams, and then helping them think through next steps. And all of these teams are doing trainings in the meanwhile. Probably don't have time to get into this. This is us trying to apply the REACH model to those support teams. So I'm sure many of you are familiar with the REACH model, but here's an example of trying to apply it to built environment. So these are the things that we'd be tracking. So we haven't really done any primary data collection, but these teams are tracking these different steps and process, and then we'll later try and summarize it and say, so what? Same thing, applying it to a policy, the policy team. All the steps they take, where some of it's community awareness, some of it's building capacity, and then getting into actual policy and environmental change. And that's it.